And now I begin to see that when you take all the pressures off, a person says, well, if there's no reason to achieve, I won't do anything. And I say, okay, don't do anything. Now what? I'm just going to sit in bed. Okay, that's doing something. You're going to sit in bed. Now what? Well, I'm kind of bored sitting in bed. Okay, now what are you going to do? It's as if once we finish with all our fears that it's all going to be chaos, after the moratorium, what a person does is he starts to build a life, because he's in a human birth and he's going to make it beautiful and meaningful and rich and stimulating and aesthetically fulfilling. There's all that stuff happens all over again. But he does it now because he really wants to do it. That's why I see that these moratorium things that we're giving to our college students, once we finish drafting everybody that doesn't go to college, we're going to find that thousands of these kids are going to drop out of college, and instead of seeing this as a horrible thing, we damn well better start seeing it as a very productive thing and start to respect the journey these kids are on, because they are not rejecting all of our traditions. They're merely rejecting the fraudulence with which we are living out our traditions. And when I went to college, I went with a lot of veterans, and I came right out of high school. And the veterans were there, and they were asking an entirely different kind of question of their education than I was, because they had dealt with life and death, and man, they wanted it to mean something to them. While I was perfectly delighted to just go through this little mechanical game of being a student, which had no more meaning than being a good student-ness. And when I taught at Harvard and Stanford and Cal, clearly the highest experience was teaching at Cal, because these were city kids who were living in the world and they had to go earn the bread in a gas station to come to college, and they wanted to know, what the hell did this child psychology have to do with bringing up their kid? They didn't want to sit around and play a lot of high abstract games. While at Harvard, everybody was delighted, we'll just play games. It doesn't have anything to do with anything, we'll just play games and enjoy the game. Now, you can say, well, there is a lot of productivity out of that pure, free, untrammeled game playing, and I can enjoy that as a research strategy. I don't enjoy it as a process of education. I don't see it as a process of education.
It's now 10 o'clock, and I said we would stop at 10. This is an interesting situation for me here, because gathered together here are not only members of the Menninger family, but members of the I don't know how to say it. The hippie community, the young people, the long hairs, the problems that our society faces, the dropouts, the young seekers, the people that don't have a vested interest in the game, the ones that are letting the change happen, the people that are on the firing line that are doing it rather than thinking about it. There are a lot of different levels at which we can define who we are here this evening. And I saw the extraordinary, it's quite easy to take a group of very high hippies and go out until we're all just beyond words together. It's quite easy to sit down to a psychiatric staff conference. Recently I spoke at Einstein Medical School to the psychiatric grand rounds. And there was a long conference table, and I came in with my beads and my whole business, and the psychiatrists all sat around a table, and I knew they were, this was usually a case conference. And I looked into their eyes and into their hearts, and I knew that I was the case. I mean, there was no doubt about it. That although the little program said I was the guest speaker, that was obviously a misprint, and I was sitting cross-legged on the end of the conference table, which is, because that's most comfortable for me. And I'm working with my beads, you see. And I look like that poor Dr. Alpert that used to be at Harvard and took all those drugs. And look at what we've been, this is a very interesting case. We can, you know, clearly schizophrenia. And I heard all that. And I used to sit in case conferences for many years, you know. So I presented myself as a case, right? And I talked about the onset of hallucination and the dissociative experiences, and I reported my whole journey in psychodynamic terms, okay, just as if I were the doctor on the case presenting the case. And it took a couple of minutes before it became apparent to everybody that the patient was presenting himself, see, which is an unusual situation for the patient to present the Freudian dynamics, the etc. Right? Now, in the whole course of it, I only used the terms like religion and God and spirit in terms of talking about the patient's responses. And when I talked about the mala, I talked about a heuristic device for cognitive centering. Okay? Because I found out that truth could be said in whatever metaphor we need to communicate with one another in. And that if the message is pure enough, it should be able to be said to everybody so that everybody can hear it in the way they need to hear it. And the interesting experience for all of us tonight was to be able to bridge all those funny little gaps that we're all stuck in, saying, I'm me and there's them here and them here, which were in my head as well, and find a way of answering each question so that all of us, the optimum possibility that all of us can hear what we need to hear. And I realize that this demands work on myself that is extraordinary, that I haven't yet done enough of, but it's the kind of work I'm doing. Because if I am pure enough in how I understand it, I will be nobody, and what will come out of my mouth will be a function of all of the consciousnesses gathered in this room at the moment. And what will come out will be the optimum thing needed for all these consciousnesses. So that's been the experiment we've been playing with tonight, and I found it an experiment we've been playing with tonight.